From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour as we enter into our 20th year, and we thank all of you who have supported us along the way. Well, we have a very crowded studio this morning. We have some more of our speech contest winners from that was sponsored for all the schools in the Diocese of Sacramento. This is the 2018-19 Annual Diocesan Speech Contest for 7th and 8th graders. This year's topic was the virtue of honesty. All the diocesan schools began learning about and participating in the Education and Virtue program they started this year, which we will all be called to live a more virtuous life. We could use that. And please be prepared. This is the command to them for their speech, to speak on St. Augustine's quote about the virtue of honesty. The truth is like a lion. You don't have to defend it. Let it loose. It will defend itself. And we're joined by Reed Schopper, who is from St. John Notre Dame, and Madeline Langle from St. John Notre Dame, and Isabella Davis from Holy Trinity, and they are all 8th graders. Welcome to all of you.
Hello.
Good to have you with us, and we'll start with you, Reed. You're holding the golden microphone, so there's a lot of pressure there.
Yep, there is a lot of pressure.
They don't let me near the golden microphone. So it's solid gold. Do you
really
believe that? Well,
no.
Your whole speech is supposed to be about truth and honesty, so I lied. It's not solid gold. So the first question I always have, people, do you have trouble saying St. Augustine? Because the city in Florida is St. Augustine. No?
I always say
Augustine?
I say Augustine.
Do you?
I don't know what the right way to
when,
say it
when
is.
When I see it, I say Augustine, and then somebody who's holier than I am says, it's Augustine. So, yeah. So anyway, so tell us a little bit about yourself.
So, like you already mentioned, I go to St. John Notre Dame School. I play baseball, basketball, and football.
Mm-hmm.
I like to play guitar in my free time, and I also like to snowboard sometimes.
What position do you play in baseball?
I play third base, first base, a little bit of shortstop, and some outfield.
Well, there's not much left.
Yeah, not much left.
Yeah, when I played baseball, I played left out. It's on the bench. My son, who's an eighth grader, he just loves baseball. Just absolutely loves it. Little trouble at the plate, but loves to pitch. So, Madeline, tell us about yourself. What do you like to do?
I participate in El Dorado Musical Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And so
that's in the city?
It's in El Dorado Hills.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. There's 4 shows a year, and mm-hmm. right now I'm doing The Little Mermaid.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that's, we had our
like,
first rehearsal.
Your role?
I'm a mer sister, so I get mm-hmm. to sing a lot, which will be fun.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm excited.
So is that a city-sponsored program, or who runs it, or is it just a private group?
It's a private group, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's nonprofit.
Is that something you've been in for a long time?
Yeah, I've been doing it since I was 6 years old.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. It's really fun.
Wow, so you really like to be on stage?
I love being on stage. It's so fun.
Wow. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
And Isabella? Tell us about yourself.
Okay, so I love swimming. It's like my favorite thing to do.
I just went swimming this morning. They had to pull me out of the pool.
I also love doing Science Olympiad, mm-hmm. and I do student council.
What's Science Olympiad?
So Science Olympiad is like it's a competition for science, and there's these specific topics every year. So you pick a topic, you study for it, and sometimes you study for it and take a big test on it,
mm-hmm.
or you build something, I'm pretty sure, and then you test what you made, and then you basically see who wins.
Very good. So do they have a swim team at Holy Trinity?
No, I swim for Aquasol. It's a competitive team.
Mm-hmm. And what's your event or events?
I gotta say, I really like the 200 backstroke.
200 back. That's an impossible stroke, you know. That is really, I tried to do that one time and they called security. That is that is really hard. No, I think that's the hardest stroke there is in the pool. Are you crazy or are you, how did you find, I mean, generally you jump in the pool, you know, you're swimming top down, face, you know, in the water. How did you get attracted to the backstroke? That's,
I honestly have no clue. I just liked it.
You like to see the sun when you're swimming?
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. Very good. Reed, like academically, I know you're a jock, but I mean, academically, what do you like to do?
Does recess count as academics?
Counts. That was my best subject.
Yeah. I mean, I'm okay. I like social studies a lot. Social studies is fun. We have a good teacher. I do okay. I'm definitely not gonna be valedictorian, but yeah. I try my best.
Can you spell valedictorian?
No. V A L E D. I don't know.
You need a blackboard.
Yeah.
My wife told me one time she was in a spelling contest, or what are they, spelling bee, when she was up in Wyoming and growing up, and the other kid for some reason got to use a blackboard and she didn't, and she said, you know, and it's like trying to make a word look right in your head is a lot harder than writing it out. She was a sore loser. So social studies, well, that's good. Do you have a high school picked out?
Not exactly. I'm thinking about going to Jesuit, though, but I'm not 100% sure.
Or are you going to sign a Major League Baseball contract out of eighth grade?
I don't know if I'm good enough to do that.
Yeah,
that would be something, though.
Yeah, I remember growing up thinking that. I mean, what do you want to do when you grow up? Just kind of like, well, I'm going to play Major League Baseball, and then Major League Baseball wasn't interested. So my dad told me I had to get a job. So, Madeline, what about you in school? When you're not acting.
When I'm not acting. I really like all my subjects. I'd say I'm learning algebra this year in math. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty fun. And I like my science class. And I like my social studies class.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you have a high school picked out? You're not going to Jesuit?
I'm not going to Jesuit, no. I'm going to Oak Ridge High School.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
That's a great school.
Mm-hmm. It'll be a nice change.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
I'm excited.
Is that close to home?
Yeah, like a mile.
Oh, very good.
Really close.
Very good. And Isabella?
Well, I don't know what high school I'm going to yet, but I'm trying to decide whether I should go to St. Francis or Pondo.
Pondo is Ponderosa?
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good. Very good. What are your subjects that you're interested in?
My subjects, I like them all. They're pretty good. But I got to say my favorite is language arts.
Language. And what's that involve?
It's like vocabulary, writing, and comprehending, reading. It's fun. My teacher loves me.
You want to be a journalist or a writer?
I'm not too sure, actually.
Very good. Very good. Well, Reed, tell us about what you were thinking when you got this topic, this is going to take away from baseball. So when you got this topic, what were your first thoughts about it?
Well, I thought to myself, there is nothing to write about. There is no way that I'm going to get anything above a B on the speech. But just a couple of ideas popped in my head, and honestly, I don't even know how I made it to the to the speech contest in the first place, but everything worked out. So
were you nervous about the speaking part of it?
I was. I'm not really much of a public speaker, like, at all. So this was a good time for me to, you know, step out of my comfort zone and do something.
So was it more about writing it or actually presenting it?
It was more about presenting it.
Yeah.
Writing it was a whole lot easier.
Yeah. What about you, Madeline?
You mean like writing your?
Yeah.
Did you write
it all out first?
Wrote it all out first. I feel like memorizing it the second time was harder because I had already had a speech like memorized in my head. I personally thought the excuse me, the speaking part was a little bit easier just because I have some more experience in that area. The writing, sometimes I felt like it was really hard to just get a start when I was sitting down to work on it. But yeah, I think both were fairly easy. It wasn't like a
used giant. To being on stage. Did you get up there and perform?
I think so.
So the topic, though, the truth is like a lion. You don't have to defend it. Let it loose. It will defend itself. How did that strike you when you first thought about how am I going to approach this as a public speaker?
When I first thought of it, I was thinking of ways that like telling the truth can better like impact the world. And I was having trouble writing that speech. And then like the week before we had to present the speeches in class, my teacher was talking about how we were supposed to present it and like the way we're moving and stuff. And I thought, well, what if people like aren't telling the truth in their speeches? So then so now my speech is more about like telling your truth instead of like physically, like I didn't eat the cookie from the cookie jar.
Right.
Yeah.
Very good. Or George Washington, he chopped down the cherry tree. Yeah. I think that whole story's made up. Isabella, what about you? Was it harder to write it or to present it?
I got to say, writing was a bit hard at first, but I sort of got it. The speaking part was really hard because I'm not really used to public speaking in front of a big crowd.
Yeah.
But it was sort of both a bit easy once I sort of got the hang of it.
What about the topic itself? Was that something easy to address?
It was a bit hard because there's so many things you could address of honesty. But so I thought that a bunch of people were going to talk about like government and social media. And since I don't really know much about the two, I just thought honesty, like with your friends, with like the people around you, since that's something really significant in today's world.
So describe the scene when you're in the finals. Is it in a gymnasium or was it at Golden One? Where was it?
It was in the gym, and it was like a lot of people.
Where was it?
It was St. James.
St. James and Davis, yeah. And were there a lot of people there?
Yeah, there's quite a few people.
And how many judges were there?
I think about seven, yeah. There's a seven. Ton.
Did they let you bribe the judges or anything?
No.
Very good. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and then, as I understand it, you guys all are going to deliver your speeches, and Gabe is going to judge them, our producer. Gabe, you're in charge. You got the trophies ready? All right. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
This is Lincoln Snyder, Superintendent of Catholic Schools, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Lincoln. And speaking of Catholic schools, we have three Catholic school students with us: Reed Shopper, Madeline Lingle, Isabella Davis, all winners of the annual diocesan speech contest for 7th and 8th graders. And you guys, you're not in school. So
no.
You wanted me to keep you till noon, or how long shall we keep you in here? All day?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is one of the benefits of winning is you
missing school.
Well, Reed, you're up. Reed,
all right.
Shopper from St. John Notre Dame, and this is his essay. And again, the topic is from St. Augustine, The Virtue of Honesty. The truth is like a lion. You don't have to defend it. Let it loose. It will defend itself. One last question. How long did they tell you? Did they give you a time limit or a word limit? Or
The time limit was it had to be between 2 and 3 minutes.
Okay. Very good.
So, all right.
Go ahead, Reed.
St. Augustine said, "The truth is like a lion. You don't have to defend it. Let it loose. It will defend itself." The lion is a strong metaphor for the truth. It will find its way out no matter how you try to conceal it. But let's be real. Kids today find it hard to relate to a lion. I interpret this concept in forms of a navigation compass, which always points north no matter how you turn it. No matter what path we are on, it points us to true north. So, our moral compass points to the truth. Although the direction is clear, people choose to step off the path and lose their way. When an untruthful statement is made, it must be supported by details that are often fabricated or made up as well. This is like stepping off the path. One lie takes us a little further down the wrong path. A second lie, to cover up the first, branches us off even further. Eventually, after many cover-up lies, we are so lost, we can't find our way back to the true path. This map of deceit causes stress, unhappiness, and distrust of the person creating the story. My experience is that kids my age find themselves tempted to create an excuse when they have failed to meet expectations of parents and teachers or to impress their friends. When I was in fifth grade, I received a 50% on my first science test. This not only plummeted my grade, but also my confidence. I didn't want my parents to be disappointed in me, and I didn't want to get in trouble. So, I threw away my return test. I got rid of the evidence. My parents will never know. Right? Wrong. When asked, I told my mom the test went great. I had to make up excuses of why I couldn't show her the score. I avoided talking to my teacher, and I worried every day as I arrived at school. I prayed that no one would ask me about it. I had drifted so far off the path of truth that I lost my way and couldn't remember what statements were made and to whom. At parent-teacher conference night, the truth was revealed when my mom saw the grade book. I lost my mother's trust, my teacher was disappointed in me, and I felt embarrassed and guilty. The loss of my computer for a month was not the consequence of my poor grade, but was the consequence of the lies that I told. Had I chosen to take the path of truth, I would have retained the respect of my parents and teachers, and received support instead of consequences. Well, I guess St. Augustine would have said, the lion came out. I did not choose to follow my moral compass. The morally driven navigation compass that is our conscience always gravitates towards God, which is the truth, our true north.
Wow. That's powerful stuff. Thank you, Reed. I don't think 50 is that bad. That's it's interesting. I mean, the classic is you've got 4 3-year-olds sitting in the lunchroom and there's spilled milk on the table, and the teacher or the mom or the dad says, "Who spilled the milk?" And the 4 kids are all pointing at each other. Yeah, and it's almost our natural tendency to lie. You know, it's just like, because like you said, you don't want to disappoint your parents. You don't want to, and you don't realize that. Not only does the truth set you free, but the truth's always helpful. I mean, we all make that mistake, but that's really really powerful stuff. Thanks, Reed.
Thank you so much,
Madeline. Madeline is an 8th grader at St. John Notre Dame. Madeline Lingle.
Telling the truth can be hard, especially when the truth may not shed a particularly good light on us. It's easier to tell the truth about a good grade on a test than about a bad one because we weren't well prepared. Let's be honest, we've all been there. Regardless of whether the truth sheds a good or bad light, is hard or easy to tell, it will always eventually be uncovered. St. Augustine said the truth is like a lion. You don't have to defend it. Let it loose. It will defend itself. In today's society, we are given incredibly specific directions for so many tasks. We're even told when and how long to brush our teeth. So when we're given a topic for a speech, we automatically look to the directions to tell us exactly what we're supposed to write about. However, the topic is usually vague, which puts the responsibility onto our shoulders. After complaining about how there's nothing to write about, we search through hundreds of our memories for a story that will make us stand out. We look for a big story to impress others rather than be our true selves, the way God created us. What I realized in thinking about this is that we're afraid to share our personal thoughts. We're afraid of what other people might think of us if we say something that we don't usually share with others. I get it. It's scary. I do it too. This also happens when we meet people for the first time. We're afraid to share personal details and be completely ourselves. When I meet someone new, I don't usually share with them the fact that I don't play a sport. It's not a huge deal, but it's something that makes me different from most of my peers. It makes me stand out. I'm afraid, like you, to be completely me, but we shouldn't be afraid to be our true selves. God's gift to us is ourselves, and by being true to who we are and using our God-given talents, we can share our truth with the world. Mother Teresa also struggled with sharing her truth with the world. When she first became a nun, Teresa decided to become a teacher. She turned out to be very good at it, and all her students loved her. Mother Teresa was content. Later in life, she decided that while she enjoyed the life she was living, she wasn't doing what God put her on this earth to do. After 9 years of teaching, Mother Teresa changed her vocation from teaching to helping the poor. She chose to help the sick and dying because she believed that was her true self. Other people thought Mother Teresa was crazy for giving up everything for the poor, and even she began to doubt her faith in God. But God never doubted his faith in her. Mother Teresa let loose her truth, which was to help the poor, even though other people told her not to. Rather than defending her truth, she let her actions speak for themselves. Mother Teresa was her truth, simply by being the woman God created her to be. God created us with one thing in mind, to be us. We can do that by using our God-given talents to make the world a better place, like Mother Teresa did. Now, we're not all cut out to be Mother Teresa, but we can still be the person God calls us to be. We can be Mother Teresa on a smaller scale. Something as small as writing a speech. Instead of thinking of stories to impress others, we should just be our true selves, the way God created us. We are unique and beautiful. We don't have to defend our truth. The lion will defend itself. Thank you.
Very good.
Thank you.
Very good, Madeline. Thanks so much. I have a friend who says that he never lies because he says it'll come back to bite you at some point. You know, 2 or 3 weeks down the road, you know, somebody will ask you something else and you'll say something and which may be truthful, but they say, wait a minute, you said you were in Kansas 2 weeks ago, you know, and you weren't in Kansas. And it just, there's no way out of it. You start telling another lie. And as you were saying, you just kind of circles around and you get caught. So it may seem self-serving at the time, but ultimately it fails you. And, and as St. Augustine says about the truth, it's, you can't unprove the truth.
Right.
Truth just sits there.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's unassailable. Isabella Davis from Holy Trinity, eighth grader. Go ahead.
Honesty is the best policy. It's been said so often, I could say it 1,000 times in my sleep. But who listens to it anymore? The question is it actually true? Say your friend worked really hard baking a cake and is so excited for you to try it. You take a bite and, ugh, it's dry, burns your throat, and you're thinking, how can it be dry yet mushy and sour? You look at her expectant face and, are you honest? And say, this is terrible. I would rather chew on my own toenails than eat this. Or do you lie and say, yummy? How about when a friend is being mean to someone and they ask you, am I being mean? Do you say, no, they totally deserve it? Or do you say, yes, you are being mean? Honesty is difficult. However, St. Augustine said, the truth is like a lion. You don't have to defend it. Let it loose. It will defend itself. Honesty is important because it keeps you true to yourself and helps you do God's will. When St. Augustine said this quote, he meant that you don't have to defend the truth or God's will. He is saying that honesty is the best policy. So when your friends ask those harsh, hard questions, you don't have to answer with a harsh truth, but you can answer honestly in a kind and gentle way. Going back to the cake example, instead of lying, you could say, "Wow, that is an interesting flavor, but I think it's a bit dry. Maybe we can try making another one together." Being honest also helps you stay true to yourself. Being true to yourself means not being a fake person or hiding behind a mask of lies. After all, when all the lies are said and done, you won't be happy with yourself. And even worse, those who you lie to won't change. They'll just trust you less instead. Your mean friend will still be mean, and your terrible baker friend will still be a terrible baker. So in the end, lying helps no one, not even you. Being honest helps you do God's will. God's will is basically to love others and treat them with respect and kindness. Being honest is not just about not telling lies. It also means to treat people fairly. God wants us to be kind to others and treat them how we would like to be treated. An honest person, because of the way they conduct themselves, follows God's will. In conclusion, honesty is about being a true and authentic person and doing God's will. John chapter 3, verse 18 says, "My dear children, let us not love with words or speech, but with actions and with truth." So whenever you're in a tough situation and don't know what to do, opt for honesty and trust that God, like a lion, will fiercely defend you.
Wow. Thank you, Isabella.
Thank you.
Very good. I've learned that when your wife says, "How's the lasagna? It's my grandma's recipe," you say it's the best lasagna I ever had. So, well, it's such a joy to have you guys with us. I'm sorry we're going to have to let you go. You're going to have to go back to school, but I could write a note and saying that we need you back this afternoon. So, Reed, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Good luck. Have you picked a college yet?
I haven't even thought about colleges yet.
All right. Madeline, what about you?
I don't know. Somewhere I can study abroad. Excuse me. Somewhere I can study abroad for a semester or two, because that'd be really fun. Or a theater college, because that'd be great too.
Yeah, I have a senior in high school, and she's still, got about 40 applications out.
Yeah.
And every day she looks at the mail. The phone rings and she jumps, But there are lots of great places that have performing arts too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good. What about you, Isabella?
I don't really have a college yet, but I was thinking one for maybe computer programming or engineering.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Engineering. That's amazing. You must be very smart.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, Reed, Madeline, and Isabella, it's a joy to have you. Thanks so much, and best wishes, and I'm sure we'll hear more from you in the future.
Okay. Thank you.
We'll take a quick break. Back with more in the Bishop's Hour right after this.
This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose.
And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
Hello, this is John Watkins, Director of Catholic Charities and Social Concerns. You are listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thanks, John. Thanks for that. And welcome back, everyone. We just had these great eighth graders on reading their winning speeches. We're joined by Cecilia Flores.
Good morning.
The director of the Newman Center at Sacramento State. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Did you get to hear any of those kids?
I did. Actually, I walked by.
You
mm-hmm.
may be shepherding them one day. Yeah. I mean, at Sac State or someplace else.
Were they talking about virtues?
Yes. Okay. It was the annual diocesan speech contest. And man, eighth graders.
That was impressive. I thought they were in high school.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Easily. Yeah. In fact, if it wasn't live and you just heard their voices, maybe if their voices were a little bit more mature, you'd think they were in college. I mean, the words coming out is just unbelievable.
That's an awesome program.
The Virtues program is awesome. Yeah, and you know, it's one thing to write it, but then to get up in front of a whole bunch of adults and judges and deliver it. That's another thing altogether.
Yeah,
they're pretty impressive.
It's good. It's good work being done.
Yeah. So how are things at Sacramento State?
Going well. Going well. We're wrapping up the semester. So
once they start in August.
Yeah, late August. Usually like the last or second to last week of August at the earliest.
And then they finish up before Christmas.
Before Christmas. So finals week runs the week of, I think it's like the 10th through the 15th, mm-hmm. something like that. So usually the second week of September is final. So once Thanksgiving break is over, it's the semester's ready to just finish. So it's kind of hectic times. Everyone's tired and stressed, and you know it really threw a wrench. They had about 2 weeks off because of the fires and the smoke and the air quality.
They actually closed it for that.
They closed the campus. Yeah, well, it was kind of day to day. They were checking every day, and then maybe they'll reopen. And then I think around the Friday before Thanksgiving week, they just decided to not have classes.
UC Davis did something very similar. It was, in fact, they moved the Causeway Classic, the football game between UC Davis and Sacramento State all the way
up to
Reno.
That's right. We heard about that. So that kind of threw a wrench. So the students are a little bit more stressed, I think, than usual because they had that long break and now they're trying to catch up. So it's the finals week, prep for finals dead week is always kind of high stress, so high hospitality time at the Newman Center.
Yeah, they still call it dead week, don't they?
They still do.
I remember when I first heard of that, I was like, oh, I don't like the word. Not only do I have finals week coming up, but we got dead week ahead of
before,
that.
You die before finals. It's probably should be the other way around, maybe. But yeah, it's an interesting time. I mean, especially now that I'm done, you know, ready, finished undergrad and master's. I remember that, and it makes me not miss it at all.
I look back now, and I wonder how I got through it. I really do, and I honestly, at least from the kids I talk to and my own kids, I think it's a lot harder today. I really do.
I think part of it, too, is they're just much more distracted.
Yeah.
You know, like before, you had the textbook and you read the textbook. Well, now they have a lot of textbooks that are e-books, right? So, like, you've got it on your iPad. You've got everything popping up on the iPad. At the it's a really distracting thing, I think, for a lot of them.
And I think the competition is it's intense.
Oh,
And everybody's thinking about a job and what am I going to do and how am I going to get ahead? And I just kind of remember just going to class without really having a plan.
Yeah.
You know, like what am I going to do when I graduate or if I graduate? And now it's like everybody's on the fast track.
Yeah, and I think part of it too, classes are so impacted at a lot of the public universities. Yeah. So they know, well, if I don't pass this class,
right,
I can't get the next class.
Right.
So I really have to pass this one, but I don't know if I'm going to, you know, if I'm going to be able to, then I'm going to take it again. And if I take it again, I don't know if I'm going to get in again because this is one of those main classes. So they have this, I think, extra layer of stress, you know, different majors too.
Plus the tuitions are so high. I mean,
yeah.
Let's face it. I mean, I know you're getting a great education, but between the state universities and the UCs, their tuition is just sky high.
Yeah, keeps going up, and the cost of living is getting higher. I mean, there's a lot of I have a lot of students that I know that went part time.
Yeah.
You know,
because of that,
they have to work, and then they can't really balance a full time school schedule, or they can't afford a full time school schedule.
You know, it's interesting. You look at the three Newman centers that we have in Chico and Davis and Sacramento. In the entire diocese, you're probably looking at the highest cost of living compared to, well, Humboldt State's not in the diocese, but it's close.
Mm-hmm.
Eureka, much lower cost of living.
Yeah, or even Central Valley,
or
like
the Central
Stan
Valley,
State,
Merced, or Stanislaus State, and those schools, Fresno.
Yeah.
Much lower. And basically, when you're talking about the cost of living these days, it's housing.
Yeah.
What's your housing going to cost? Because groceries are going to be about the same. But
but
housing is, it's wild. And I don't know how they do it with it.
Yeah,
or they come out with these, you know, owing $100,000.
Debt is a real thing. You know, I've seen that too. It's an interesting thing, I think, now for the college student of today to try to figure out, you know, what they really should be doing. I have students all the time that come in and it's like, well, I think I have to take a semester off because I'm late. I'm in debt. I've gone into debt to live here, to go to school, but now I can't afford to go to school because I have to live here. You know,
and then the pressure to immediately get the most high paying job, whether it's necessarily in your field or something you really like. Well, gee, if I go into this, I'm going to make more money, and I've got this huge debt on my shoulders.
Yeah, it's a lot of just pressure. For a lot of them, I see it on the daily basis. So finals for us is kind of, we kick into hospitality mode and we open our center longer hours. And we also, we have more food and just things available. It's kind of a silent study zone.
People come hang out and study.
They do, especially during finals week because when school's kind of over and exams are around the corner, you know, all the libraries at school are full, all the cafes, you know, it's hard to find a study space. So we kind of offer ours as another option. We kind of push it to the dorms because the dorms are right across the street. We have a lot of traffic actually during those weeks. We have parking there so people can park there for free. And then a lot of them will come early study because we open really early and close really late. They'll come study and then they'll walk over to their exam. They don't have to worry about not finding parking and things like that. But it's interesting because I think a lot of them just want some peace, you know? So we try to pray throughout the day. We bring our priests around a little more often for just, you know, confession if they need confession. We usually do a mass to kick off finals and things like that. So it's crazy times. But it's been good. I think they need that support. Granted, sometimes they bicker, you know, they're in bad moods, a lot of them, but I've seen that, you know, some of them are like, we're not done yet. You might have finished and you're celebrating, but I still have a final tomorrow and, you know, you're getting a little loud. So we've zoned off the center. So we have silent study rooms and group study rooms.
I remember one year I went to UC Davis and I remember I would actually look at the final schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Before I took a class.
Just to see that's a smart idea.
And finals would even be on Saturdays. We never had class on Saturday, but you had finals on Saturdays.
Yeah.
And your roommate is done on Tuesday. You still got this one hanging over you on Saturday, and you're going, that's not fair.
Yeah, and then some of them, you know, because of that, they'll have like four finals in one day.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
Some classes, you know, there's no final, but there's a paper that's due, so it's kind of the same thing. Yeah. And the scheduling just, I mean, you could tell. I've had students like that. It's just like you see them the day before like a triple exam day, and they are just spent. You know, they have no more energy, no more desire. A lot of them are, you know, this is when they start. So I'm just going to drop out. I'm not going to do that. Yeah. It's a lot of stress. But
Can you just tell from, like, if somebody, like, a day in October or a day now, can you just tell by looking at them that it's finals week?
I think so. I mean, a lot. You know, there's a lot less focus on what kind of clothes you're wearing. We've got a lot of pajama, sweatshirt, sweatpant lingerers. Yeah. Don't look like they've slept much, you know, or they just, a lot of them just look very tired. You can tell they're very tired and they've been up really late studying or working or whatever it is. So there is, I think, a heaviness, but I think that's kind of natural, you know, what we all went through stress. Granted, I will give it to them. I do think it's a lot more complicated. And I mean, I was in college about 10 years ago, so it's not that long ago, but I do see kind of a visible a lot of the factors that are coming into play are a little bit more complicated than when I was in school, for sure.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm a little bit further than 10 years, and it's still, you know, it's still, we have one daughter now who's a senior in high school,
and
she's going through the college selection.
Those are rolling in now, right? I'm assuming hearing back.
She goes to the mailbox, and there's like 40 brochures from frequently from schools she never heard of.
Yeah.
Or I've never heard of.
Yeah.
And I go, wow, how do they even have your name? You know, and of course, it's all personalized.
Yeah.
With her name and we've had our eye on you.
Yeah.
And, you
know, imagine yourself here.
Imagine
that kind
yourself
of stuff.
Here. You know, and it's always the kids walking down. There's a picture of the ivy covered.
Yeah.
Administration
the trees,
building.
Leaves. Yeah.
And you're wondering, does it
all in
really
their gear,
look like this?
Holding books. It's
yeah, it's interesting, but I can see the. I mean, she's excited about it.
Yeah,
but it's also. It's stressful. It's stressful. Number one, am I going to get in? And then number two, would I like it? And how far is it from home? Mm-hmm. And all these things. And can we afford
it? Can you afford it?
Yeah.
And then, you know, layer scholarship applications on top of that.
Yeah, she's all, what do they call it, the FAFSA or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Where, I mean, it was like a term paper.
Yeah.
She's. You
for
know.
You too, as a parent, right?
Yeah.
You have a lot of things you have to fill out in there.
Is that all you make, Dad?
It's crazy.
If you're poor, it's a good thing on the FAFSA.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, you know, it's hard to. I remember doing FAFSA and just thinking, how did they calculate this? This is impossible.
Yeah. FAFSA for
I've
those.
I've got to qualify for more than this.
Exactly. It's the financial, I don't know what it all says, but financial aid.
Yeah, it's the free application for federal student aid.
Oh,
yeah.
Boy, you've got it. Mm-hmm. Of course, you're involved in that.
I had, had to fill it out myself.
Yeah.
Then I looked for other scholarships because it wasn't much what they were offering. But yeah, I think that's another layer. Well, see, financial aid actually plays, a part in their stress as well because you do have to get a certain GPA or you lose your financial aid.
That's right.
So I've seen that where students will, you know, they don't make the required GPA and they lose part of their funding.
Right.
And they have to take less classes. So it's many layers, I think, of stress. So pray for those college students that, you know, we just like to be more present to them in those times because
Where's the role of the Newman Center? You're at a public university. You're not
we are.
A Catholic university or even a private university. And I know there are Newman Centers at most public universities and at a lot of the Catholic universities. What's the role of the Newman Center?
So for us, we're across the street. So luckily, proximity-wise, we are right by the sign, which helps a lot as far as traffic and visibility.
And same with Chico and Davis.
Yes, exactly.
They're very close. Not quite as close as Sac State, but very close.
Like we can see the Sac State sign from our window, which is great. We are a club on campus, which is facilitated by our student team. So we have students who are leaders, and they are the ones who they're president, treasurer. We have all of those officer roles for the club. So we are an on-campus organization.
Right.
And through being an on-campus organization, which is can only be led by students. Like, I couldn't go in there and do anything with that. It's led by them, and they can reserve rooms. They can participate in voting for student government. We're allowed to table. So we do that through the body of our organization, which is the on-campus club.
Right. Do you receive any funding from the student association?
We can. Actually, we can apply for it. So there are scholarships that Sac State provides to student organizations that we are able to apply for because we are a student organization. Right. And there's things they do. Little things. So, like, for example, they have the student body president. I don't know what they call it there, but they have their elections each year. And part of the elections is your club can just be on the ballot. Right. And for every vote you get $2.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So something simple like that. So, you know, it's not a ton of money, but it's a little bit of help. But you can apply for scholarships for all kinds of things.
It's interesting to me because we always hear this separation of church and state and all this stuff. And it'd be so easy for people to say, well, a public university, you should not have a Catholic organization on the campus or any religious. And it's not how the Constitution is meant. It's meant the way it is, you know, is we sanction student clubs. And if it happens to be religious, fine, we're going to sanction you and if you follow the rules. And if it's not religious, we're not going to, based on your content.
Exactly.
You know, and that's really the way it should be.
And it's great. I mean, we've had, I think, a lot of support we've found from that. I think there's a lot of Catholics on campus. I don't think they take that information on application.
Right.
So people have asked me, what's the percentage? I have no idea. I don't think they're even allowed to ask that. I'm not really sure.
I don't think they are.
Yeah.
It can be an optional one of those.
Yeah. Like, you know, so we were able to do things. So we have coming up during finals week for the past 3 years, we've done an Our Lady of Guadalupe Mass on campus. So we have another one this year.
Right, it's in Wednesday, the middle of finals week.
In the Union. Yeah. And so Bishop Soto's great. He's coming again for the third year in the row to do that Mass for us. And he says, you know, during exams, everyone is a believer. You know, they all want to get their prayers in. And Guadalupe, for many, you know, Latinos, Filipinos, I think many, Californians, we could even say. There's a lot of, I think, devotion to Our Lady of Guadalupe.
She's the patroness of the Diocese of Sacramento.
Exactly.
And of the Americas.
Yes. So for us to have a Mass, you know, we weren't sure I was going to go the first year, and there were like 200 people.
Wow.
So we've done it every year, and it
and
keeps growing.
It's not a holy day.
It's not a holy day of obligation, but I think because people culturally remember, you know, as children, or they're encouraged by their parents, you know, go. And it creates another layer, I think, of spirituality in the midst of finals. You know, it's been nice. I know a lot of people last year came in, they had a final, they couldn't come to the Mass. The Mass is at noon, by the way, if you have any students on campus studying for finals. The Mass is at noon. We have the singing, like the serenade to Our Lady at 11:45. But some people can't make it. You know, they have a final at 12:15, 12:30, whatever time it is, but they'll come before. So, like, you know, we open the doors and there's people there waiting, you know, and they want to leave their flowers and say their prayer. Bishop did. I had a few girls last year to ask for a blessing. They were off to final, they couldn't stay, but Bishop gave them a blessing. Mm-hmm. I mean, so you see there's
what kind of grade they get.
Maybe they'll come back. If you're listening, come let us know. But you know, there's still, I think we write off young people today as having no faith, but that really proves the opposite.
Yeah, exactly.
Proves the opposite. And I wouldn't even say, like, it's not superstition. They believe. Yeah. They do believe that intercession is powerful, that prayer is powerful still, even in this day. So for us to do that Mass, it's always a great thing. It's in the middle of finals. And you know, we would think, oh, maybe people are just going to wander in. And then we realized, you know, some people came dressed up. You know, it's very traditional to come in your traditional garb and to bring flowers. And so people show, so you knew, like, they prepared. This wasn't, I was walking by and I saw the sign. This was, I knew I was going to make this part of my day today. So I think it's just a beautiful thing for us to have that. And it's something that provides just, you know, an act of faith for a lot of those students in the middle of this really crazy time.
Yeah, well, you know, Our Lady of Guadalupe, if you grew up in California, you certainly knew about it. And she's everywhere. She's on buildings. She's on T-shirts. She's everywhere, you know. It's amazing. I suppose Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, it would be similar in terms of the devotion. But it's just... you know, and she's a stalker, I'll tell you.
What do you mean by that?
I'll try to keep it short, but our youngest son, who's now an eighth grader, he's now 13. He was born and was fine, and about 12 hours in, I'm heading home to take care of our 3-year-old, 2-year-old, 1-year-old, and who were staying with grandma or an aunt or something at that point. And I get a call from my wife, and she says they've taken him to the NICU, the neonatal ICU, and it doesn't look good. And he was fine when he was born, you know, and so took the first exit I could find and turned around. I just wanted to get there before he died. I mean, it was that serious. And we got there, and he was having a breathing problem. He was a little bit premature, and it was a C-section, but he was having a terrible breathing problem. And you know, all the doctors are, and I mean, they've got tubes, and you can't even hold him, you know. And about the third day in, the doctors, you know, they're just saying, we've done everything we can do. You know, he's just, it's real touch and go. And they had one phone in the whole, there's probably 30, 40 babies. This was the UC Davis Health Center and here in Sacramento. And they only had one phone there because they didn't want a lot of disturbing. So if the family member was, so my sister from Tucson calls me, and I said to her, I said, Joe, I need a miracle. And she says, you're going to get one. And so I said, okay, fine. And so there was this right next, and they're all real close together. They're in their little bassinets. Right next to us was a baby boy named Diego. And his mom was always attending to him, never seen the dad, and just spoke Spanish. And then I see Diego's dad walk in, and he's wearing a plain white T-shirt. You know, that's all. And we looked at each other. We didn't speak the same language, but both of us had our sons next to each other, and we had that simpatico with each other. You know, and just like we're both in the same situation. And then he turns around to take care of Diego. So now all I can see is his back. Full on his back is the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe, and it says, El Milagro de Tepeyac.
Oh, yes.
The miracle of Tepeyac. And my sister had just told me, you're going to get a miracle. And about an hour later, the doctor came in and said, Mick, our son has turned the corner.
Oh, wow.
And I'm just like, So
you must have a big devotion.
She's got me. We got pictures of her.
That's
all over the
house. Beautiful story.
Yeah, and it just, I thank her to this day.
Oh, my goodness. That's beautiful.
Thanks
for sharing
that. Or for interceding with, God. Yeah, it just, it's what she just, she's there at the most unexpected times. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
what
time's Mass?
Mass is at noon in the Union. You'll find us on the first floor. We'll be there starting at around 11 to set up. Serenade to the Virgin Mary is at 11:45.
Mañanitas, what is that?
Mañanitas is just they sing all these beautiful songs in honor of our Blessed Mother. And we actually have...
Prior.
Yes. Yeah. So we have a... one of our students, actually, she won a national mariachi competition. She placed first. She's actually leading all the music, and she's a beautiful singer, Beatriz Figueroa, and she'll lead all of those things before Mass begins. Wow. So we'll have that time, and we set up kind of a little shrine for people to leave their flowers. We bring flowers in case people don't have them, and we really encourage people to just, you know, make a prayer and an offering to her for her intercession.
In many parishes, it'll start like at 5 in the
morning.
Oh, yeah. Right?
Well, I know. The shrine downtown, they start, I think, the day before. Like, they do a vigil the night before. They're up all night. And they have various times. But, yeah, 4 in the morning is a common time, 4 or 5 in the morning. And there's masses throughout the day.
I went to mass there one December the 12th. After the show, I got there, I think it was 11 o'clock mass.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, I picked the right mass, the food.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Come for the mass, stay for the food. Oh, my goodness.
It's a beautiful, it's just such a beautiful time, you know, the festive
really
time.
Is.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people maybe grew up, if you grew up in other countries, the town festival around the feast day is a big thing. I know in the
have
Philippines
you ever been
it was too.
In the Philippines, sure.
Yeah, it was huge.
What have you ever been to Mexico City on December 12th?
I have 12th? Not. I have not been to Mexico City ever, so that's still on my bucket list of things I would love to do.
But in the
do.
Philippines, of course.
Oh, it's huge. My town's is November, or it's October for St. Francis of Assisi's, our town feast day. And then in, where I was in Central America, it's actually coming up in Honduras. Our town's was the Immaculate Conception. So getting a little homesick for mission.
So St. Francis was in October?
October. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So a lot of those days, you know, life still revolved around the,
sure.
the feast days of saints, you know, and I think this still kind of does. People know December 12th is coming up, and it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing.
Wow. So that's, yeah, it's in the Philippines, I mean, the Pope, that's the greatest, the largest crowd ever in the in the history of the earth, other than we don't know about the miracle of loaves and fishes.
Yeah. I think Mexico City might have beat us out.
Is that right?
After, but at the time.
Oh, when the Pope
came. I think so.
Yeah.
But at the time, yeah, the gathering in the Philippines, that was the biggest recorded gathering of in human history.
In human history,
but I think I'd have to fact check, but I think Mexico City might have beat us out a couple years after that. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow,
we
amazing.
Know how to. We're devoted people, Bob.
I was going to say that's amazing. That is amazing. So what's on the horizon for January?
Well, you know, they don't start school until the end. So we kind of just regroup and regather and start prepping and planning. Spring is really busy because, you know, we have Lent and then we have this huge Ash Wednesday ordeal on campus where we offer multiple masses.
And they're also very well attended.
Very well attended. And we've found, too, we were considering maybe doing more. So we'll have to see. But yeah, the same kind of things. We do Ash Wednesday on campus. We do Holy Week on campus where we bring priests every day. So those are kind of the big things. And then sandwiched in between are all of our normal activities.
Yeah.
So busy times.
Is spring, is it different than the fall term in terms of the attitude of the kids?
I
was always happier in the spring.
I think so. I mean, the weather's better, but I think it's also graduation season is around the corner. So I think
they graduate early. They graduate
in May.
They do,
in May. And so I think for a lot of, especially our seniors, it's stressful, but they know that they're almost done and there's a big accomplishment on the horizon. And even if you're not graduating, you see people you know graduating. So it's kind of a lot. I think it's more of a booster. Sac State eliminated the fall graduation now. So now this is the only commencement there is. So a lot of anticipation, excitement in the air.
Wow.
Yeah.
It must be fun to be out there.
It is. It's a lot of work, but it's
a lot,
it's
a lot
fun.
Of work, but it's that fun. Satisfying kind of work.
Yeah.
Like you feel like you're making a difference in
for sure in
people's lives. Do you see on the weekends, when do you have Mass?
We have Mass on Sundays, 7:30, but only while the semester is. So we actually have our last Sunday Mass this coming Sunday.
That's 7:30 p.m. Yeah, people are like, oh, 7:30
in
the morning.
It's a student Mass, so it's later in the day.
Cal has one at like
it's
midnight.
I think it's 10 p.m. candlelight Mass at the Cal Newman Center. That's the last ditch Mass, as we called it. I grew up in the Bay Area. That was like, I haven't gone to Mass. Well, there's a 10 at Cal. You have no excuse.
Yeah, it's like I missed Mass. Oh, darn. Oh, there's a Mass.
Yeah. Can't really use that excuse anymore, can you?
Drive to Berkeley.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very, very interesting. Well, Cecilia, thanks for all you do.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me on. It's always a joy to be here.
Have a blessed December the 12th.
Thank you.
Yeah. Watch out. turn around. You're going to see her. She will not let you go. Amen. Underwriting for the Bishop's Hour is provided by Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services, a ministry of the Diocese of Sacramento. As a church-owned nonprofit founded in faith, Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services is dedicated to providing education, support, and resources during life's most difficult moments. They will make every effort to enable you to realize your final wishes while empowering families to make completely informed decisions. You can give them a call. They're at 855-525-2285. That's 855-525-2285. We're also brought to you by a generous grant from Christine Cipperly, Marriage and Family Therapist. If you're looking for help with family or personal problems, if you'd like help from someone with a Catholic point of view, someone who understands the importance of marriage and family and affirms the dignity of every human life, Christine Sipperly is a trained and experienced counselor of married couples, families, and individuals. She can work with you on your marriage, your parenting, or your individual struggles in a way that will not violate our faith. Christine is a wonderful, wonderful therapist. Give her a call. She's at 530-400-4757. That's 530-400-4757. We'd like to thank Christine Sipperly and Catholic Cemeteries and Funeral Services for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening, everyone. God bless. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.